welcome to Outbeat Radio on KRCB Windsor Santa Rosa, a program that focuses on issues by, for, and or about members of the gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender communities. You can hear Outbeat Radio every Sunday night at 8 p.m.
This is Living Proof, and we're your hosts. I'm Dr. Diana Grayer, and next to me is my co-host and wife, Sheridan Gold, my sweetie. Tonight in studio, we have two elder women in the midst of young love.
Ooh.
Sharon Macer, hello.
Hello, I'm glad to be here. Thank you for having us.
You're so welcome. And Sharona Tracy, also known as Cha-Cha.
Hi, Di. Hi, Sheridan. It's so nice to be here tonight. Thank you.
So glad to have you both.
Yes. Stay tuned to learn about their histories, alone and together, and what they are using now from the lessons they've learned before, from before in their relationships. But first, here's news and events with Outbeat member Greg
I have Moran. Found Outbeat Radio News, your source for LGBT news from the North Bay and beyond.
Good evening, this is Greg Moralia with your Outbeat Radio News for this Sunday, March 2nd, 2014. At least one person has been killed in Uganda since the nation's president signed the anti-homosexuality bill into law this last Monday. This bill imposes lifetime prison sentences for certain LGBT people and criminalizes anyone who supports LGBT equality or promotes homosexuality. Ugandan LGBT activist reports that a suspected gay couple was attacked after a local tabloid published the names of 200 LGBT people labeled by the tabloid as Uganda's top homos. One of the people was killed in the attack, while the other prominent LGBT activists have gone into hiding to avoid becoming victims themselves. Inside the article outs 200 supposed LGBT people, including Ugandan and international activists, as well as celebrities and other socialites who are suspected of being LGBT or being homosexual sympathizers. President Obama and Secretary of State John Kerry both said they were disappointed by the bill's passage. At least three other international partners of Uganda have made changes to aid provided to the East African nation in response to the anti-LGBT laws enactment. Al Jazeera reported the Netherlands reportedly froze $9.6 million in subsidy to Uganda. Al Jazeera also noted that Denmark and Norway both announced they would redirect more than $8 million each in government aid toward private sector organizations and human rights groups. And here in the U.S., last week we reported on Senate Bill 1062 passed by the Arizona State Senate that would permit business owners to refuse service to LGBT people and others under the guise of religious freedom. This week, Arizona Governor Jan Brewer said that she would, quote, do the right thing. Arizona's U.S. Senators John McCain and Jeff Flake have used Twitter to voice their hopes that Brewer will veto the bill. The Republican leaders join a growing opposition to the measure from both public and private sectors. Andrew Wilder, Brewer's spokesperson, confirmed that the governor had a phone meeting with Apple officials who asked Brewer to veto the measure as well. The tech giant plans on opening a large sapphire glass manufacturing plant just outside of Phoenix, which would employ up to 700 workers, a move that was considered a major coup for Brewer's administration. 83 other companies, including AT&T, voiced their opposition to the bill as well. An out NBA player Jason Collins will wear number 98 during his time with the Brooklyn Nets as a tribute to Matthew Shepard. Collins, who made history as the first openly gay athlete in any major league sports team, made history when he joined the Nets. Collins acknowledged that he chose the number in reference to the year of Shepard's murder and the rise of hate crime laws. Judy Shepard, Matthew Shepard's mother, said she planned to be on the audience this week when Collins debuted his shirt, and she said she hopes to welcome him with open arms if given the chance. She said, I'm just happy for him. It's wonderful that he's playing again. And here in California, a popular gay bar known as the Abbey in West Hollywood is giving homophobic politicians a taste of their own intolerance. The Abbey announced on Monday that it is banning, effective immediately, any legislator who supports bills to discriminate against gays and lesbians. The bar is keeping a list of those politicians who voted for such bills by the door for the bouncer's reference. Meanwhile, bar staff are currently compiling dozens of headshot photos of the politicians to put on the wall. The bar's deny entry list is in response to recent bills in Missouri and Arizona that allowed businesses, religious organizations, and even public servants to discriminate against gay people. These bills have come back after blowback from businesses who have denied same-sex couples wedding cakes, photography services, and venues. David Cooley, founder of the Abbey, said in a statement this week, "I've learned that I can't stop crazy, ignorant, or stupid, but I can stop it from coming through my doors." And finally, this week, the California Secretary of State's office announced that an effort to put a measure to repeal the state's School Success and Opportunity Act, otherwise known as AB 1266, on the November ballot has failed, as the law's opponents failed to turn in the required 504,760 valid signatures needed to put the law to a vote. This first-of-its-kind law is designed to provide transgender students with the same rights and protections as their cisgender counterparts, including guaranteeing access to school sports teams and gender-segregated facilities that correspond with the student's gender identity. For information about local LGBT events happening here in the North Bay, go to gaysonoma.com. And if you have news or an event you'd like to share with our listeners, be sure to tell us about it by going to our own website at outbeatnews.com, where you can follow us all week long on Facebook and Twitter for the latest LGBT news and information from here in the North Bay and beyond. For Gary Carnevale, I'm Greg Moralia. Now back to Living Proof with Sheridan Gold and Dr. Diana Greer.
And if you just joined us, this is Living Proof with Diana and Sheridan. And we're in studio this evening discussing love and relationships in elder years with Sharon Macer and Cha-Cha Tracy.
Hello, you two women again.
Yes.
Hello.
Hi. Hello. Oh, I'm looking forward to the next, 50 minutes with you?
Mm-hmm.
So let's start with you, Sharon. Tell us about yourself.
Well, I think for the purpose of this, of the topic and what we're talking about, I want to say that I'm 70, so I'm an elder. Although I think I'm part of the new kind of 70, people that are much younger than my parents. My mother was much older than I am when she was probably 35 or 40, actually.
Say more about that. What do you mean?
I think what happened is people became sort of dead. They became kind of frozen in who they were. They didn't have the options for growth. And when you don't grow, you kind of, you mummify. So I think it's a different kind of aging experience. You know, what I experience is different than what I saw my mother go through. And it feels a lot more youthful and a lot more fluid and a lot more flexible and a lot more participatory in life with lots of options. And not much has changed since I got older, except I got older. So I think that's a difference. And so I guess I feel like I have a youthful attitude. Growing. It's something about growing that's very important. When I grow, I'm like a happy camper and I keep changing. So I keep evolving and then I seem like I'm always young or something. It's like a, you know, a tree growing, its leaves grow and grow and grow, and and then I'll get to the next stage, but I'm not there yet. So I think, you know, my age, because we're talking about relationship, has a lot to bear on my perspective about it. Also, my personal area of interest is in women's spirituality, which is really a religion, or almost a religion, around the core kernel of women's empowerment, how women do things in the world, women's ways, women's needs, women's desires, women's role, women's power. All that is really the kernel of women's spirituality. It's very functional religion, actually. It helps women grow and be strong in the world. Gives them tools and knowledge. So I'm very involved in that, and I have a nonprofit organization that is dedicated to that here in this area, which maybe I'll get a chance to say more about or not. And then I think for personally, I like to be creative. I enjoy especially artwork, some music, but mostly I've done a lot with photography and handcrafts and weaving and silk painting and textiles and things like that. So that's a big part of my life. That's part of my creativity happens in the work area with the women's school, and part of it happens in the art arena. And I enjoy that immensely.
Mm. Beautiful. Wow. I'm looking forward to diving into all of that juicy stuff you just shared.
Oh, thank you.
And cha-cha. Would you like cha-cha or Sharona?
Cha-cha is good.
Okay, great.
And I am living proof that a lesbian Mormon from a little farming town in northern Utah can find happiness in later life.
Oh.
And in this.
Yes.
thank you. In this relationship, I am the older woman. I'm 73. And Sharon's the younger girl. At 70. And I don't let her forget it. I am an artist. I'm a musician. I am on a sacred spiritual path that just fills my soul. I've been part of a sacred feminine circle for over 20 years, the same group meeting for 20 years, the same 8 women. And it's been a wonderful, wonderful growing experience and a sisterhood just beyond belief. And I am also, have been in recovery, clean and sober, for 27 years. And I'm very grateful for my sobriety.
Wonderful.
Yeah, it's all good. It's really, really good. And I love to paint. I love to cook. I love to keep house. I love to garden. I love to make love. And I like to help others a whole big bunch. That's part of well, who I am and what I do. Mm. So there you have it.
Well, thank you. Mm-hmm. Beautiful. Juicy stuff. And especially when you say stuff like, and make love, and it's like, do I go there now? Do we change direction?
Oh, we can
but
go
no.
there.
But no, you know, we start from the beginning. Yeah. Like, you know, you're 2 older women, right? And you wear it well. Just to say for the audience, if you don't see them, you can't see them. Yeah. Spiky haircut. They wear it well.
Glitter. You got glitter on your face.
Bright red. Sharon's wearing in here.
Leopard tights.
Leopard tights. Yes, exactly.
Blue leopard tights. Blue leopard tights.
So yeah, I mean, so how did you plan to like date or to see each other, or how did that
this
come
is how
about?
It happened.
Okay, please tell
okay. us. Okay. So, Chacha's at a drum circle. That's me. Sacred drum circle. Very, very sacred. And I'm with my ex of 15 years, who is now my beloved and my dearest sister. And we were both at a drum circle at the Center for Spiritual Living. And the lights were dim, and we were drumming, and people got up and were dancing. And this woman danced in front of me, and she had her arms over her head, and she had a beautiful drum. She was carrying a beautiful drum, and she was just moving in rhythm to the drumming. It was so beautiful, and she was so into what she was doing. And she was just, it was really, really quite awesome. She really, really, really caught my eye. To where I said to my partner at the time, I said, I need to know this woman. I need to know her better. How am I going to do that? So I didn't know, but I just knew that I was really, really enthralled with her physical presence, her spiritual essence that I could see. And lo and behold, as time went by, we started seeing each other at the Center for Spiritual Living, and just started to say hello, how are you, that kind of thing, and would you like to go for a cup of tea, and you know what lesbians do, come on,
putting the moves on, huh?
The moves on.
Were you with your partner at the time?
No, though? I say my partner, she's my sister, my beloved.
Okay, so how many years ago was this?
This was 3 years ago.
Okay, I got mixed up with the...
I had been single for 8 years before that.
I hadn't been
in a relationship.
Okay.
And I really wasn't looking to be in a relationship. I wanted to not to live with somebody. You know, I wanted to date and have fun and do a little coochie-coochie maybe, but I didn't want to live with anybody. Yeah. Well, that's all changed.
So how so?
Well, now we're living together after after being in each other's company for 2 years back and forth. Sharon lived in Sebastopol, and I live in Windsor, and would go back and forth and do different things, walking, creating, playing music, watching movies, working with the women's school that Sharon's a director of, different things that we would do. And
kayaking.
Lots of
kayaking.
Yeah, that was one of our first dates. Mm-hmm. Huh? That was quite wonderful.
That was fun.
And we still do that. Yeah. And well, I'm going to turn it over to you, Sharon. You can take it from here.
Okay. So I just have a question that I'm thinking maybe the audience is thinking. So I'm going to ask it. But if it's not in, if you don't want to answer it this second, you don't have to, but get to it. Okay. Uh-huh. So you met 3 years ago. You said cha-cha, how am I going to meet this woman? We started going for tea, then we started dating. So here's my question: when did you decide to move in together, and how long have you been living together?
Oh, okay.
Those are my questions. But since you just gave the mic to Sharon for her to continue the story, then, you know, I'm sure you'll get to my question whenever you get to it. I'm just alleviating the anxiety of the listening audience.
The audience. So
2 years, 5 months.
2 years, 5 months.
Dating 2 years, living together 5 months. Okay.
Well, you know what? I think what happened was very significant and very different than my previous experiences. We've been living together now for 5 months, and I think we met about 2 years ago, or a little over 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. That's what you were saying.
Yeah.
So when we first met, I was not into relationships at all. My last relationship was in about 2004, and I had had many relationships with good people. I had been married, I had a child, and then I came out when I was 36. And I'd had a number of good relationships with women, or a number of relationships with good women, I'll put it that way. But they all dissolved. And after about the 12th or 13th of these, or, you know, really good women, I had to say, something's not right here. And I don't know what it is, but it obviously has to do with me, because these really are all good women. They're creative, they're independent, they're strong, they're smart. So I stopped. I just said, I'm not being in a relationship anymore. And I kind of forgot about relationship. I went back to school, got a master's, and, you know, did other things. And then a few years after that, then I started a PhD program, and then I didn't like where that was going, so I dropped out of that. And then it was like, okay, well, now what? And I thought, well, maybe I am ready for a relationship. So I had a relationship, and that was a total disaster. It couldn't have been worse. So I thought, okay, I'm not any better off than I was, even though I had been studying relationships and taking classes and learning about how to have relationships and how to communicate and all that. And so I was still at that point of, there's something wrong with me or something. I don't know how to do this, and I don't even want to try. It's like, I don't know where to start. So when we first met, I was not into relationship at all.
Mm-mm.
And that was a good thing, because then what happened was we spent the next year, we kind of casually spent time together doing things we like and got to know each other for who we were without any, there was no, like, you know, the only payoff was whatever we felt about being with each other and whatever we did. There was no, like, I'm going to get to that point. You know what I mean? Like, I wasn't trying to make this a relationship.
What about cha-cha?
We had fun. Huh. Yeah, had fun.
You had fun. You weren't.
Still do, but we really had fun those 2 years.
It was like you sex weren't pressing. Was off the table.
Yeah. But you weren't pressing to be in relationship, just a friendship. Okay.
She was very respectful of that, which I appreciated.
I mean, yes, I would have liked that, but it wasn't happening. Huh. So
it was wonderful, because we got to know each other, and all my relationships, one of the things that I think was wrong with them in my previous incarnation of relationships was they were all based on either romance or sex. Mm. And those were the points of attraction. Those were what drew me to people. So I discovered that those two things do not make relationships, even though they're nice and they're gratifying in the moment. My relationship with Chacha is completely different than those relationships. The dynamic, what's important, everything that goes on. And I think I needed that time to experience getting to know someone and discovering that I liked them and that they were meaningful in my life and contributed to my life. And it wasn't about the pleasure of the moment. And that, I have found it to be true that sex will take over, and then the other issues don't get exposed or addressed. The personalities don't get really addressed. And then by then it's too late because I'm oxytocined out or up, you know, and I'm invested heavily in this relationship and I want it to keep going, and I'm sort of out of control, you know, and it's messy to undo. So it was much better to start the other way and develop a friendship and then consciously decide, oh, this is a good relationship. So I'm, you know, it was really different in that way. And the other thing that I think is really important about our coming together was where we met. We met doing something that we both enjoyed. We met doing at a drum circle. It's just something that we both like. And I think that's a really wonderful way to meet someone, because you have things in common. And then you have a wider plateau to build a relationship on.
Did you know, Sharon, that you were dancing in front of this woman who, did you notice anything when you were dancing in front of her? Because I've seen you dance, so I know how you dance.
How does she dance, Diana?
will you share how she danced? How was, describe it.
I don't have any words right this minute to describe it.
I mean, she's flowing. And yeah, flowingly and sensual.
That
and
night it was like the rhythm of the drums and the spirit was moving through her.
Mm-hmm.
Through from her feet to the tips of her fingers to tingle the cymbals on the drum.
Mm,
was really beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I needed to know her better.
The drum was, it was a really nice drum circle. It was a large drum circle, and the lights were kind of dim. And you could, at a certain point, you were invited to get up and move. So I had a hand drum, and I just walked around with this flow of people. But it was a spiritual experience of the drum for me, and of music and rhythm and vitality.
So you were in the middle of dancing, and you weren't really aware of people watching you. You were in the moment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, pretty much. And I was new to Sebastopol. I'd only been here, I think, less than a month. So it was one of my first forays into, cultural, social activities in the area.
Where did you come from?
I'd been in Petaluma, which is like a different country.
How so, Sharon? How so? I thought you were going to say like Southern California
now.
Or something.
We're from Petaluma. No, watch out.
Yeah, that's right. But you're on the fringe. You're on the country.
Yeah.
Petaluma, I would describe as very neat and organized and orderly and clean. And Sebastopol, I would describe as raggedy and, kind of organic.
Mm-hmm.
So different personality types. Mm-hmm. They're really different communities.
Mm-hmm. I'm curious to how other people see you two. I mean, your community of other elder women. I mean, do you find a lot of elder couples together? Or how do they see you moving in together at such a late age?
To me is that we make a really cute couple.
Oh.
Cute mm-hmm. couple.
Hmm. Uh-huh.
And from my friends, my friends before Sharon, they're very happy to see us together. They're happy to see me happy,
mm.
which is really nice.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful.
I love that feedback more, you know.
Mm-hmm. Sharon, what about you? Any? No.
Rephrase the question.
I'm just curious about what other people are saying or seeing, and, you know, your community,
mm-hmm.
other elder women in your community. I mean, Are they partnered up?
Our community is very, runs the gamut from about 40-year-olds, I think, to, well, we're probably among the oldest. And some of them are straight, some of them are single, some of them are wannas, and some of them are not wannas, you know, want a relationship. And so I think I feel part of the women's community more than the lesbian community in a lot of ways. But I think they all like us. I think there's something reassuring to them about us, that that we like each other and that we can have a good relationship, and it's like there's hope for the future. Something I think they are very, they
living
like
proof.
Living proof.
Yeah.
I'd say so. Before we break for a music break, Cha-Cha, in when you were telling us about yourself, you mentioned that you've been with the same 8 women for over 20 years in a sacred circle.
Yes.
Could you talk a little bit more about that? It's very intriguing to me.
Well, in these in the circles, they are sacred. They start with ritual, with being called, calling in Mother, Father, God, the spirits, the goddesses. We each repeat our names 3 times, knowing that in doing this, we will be seen, we will be heard. And that's really important. Mm-hmm. And we have a talking stick that we use. We study the goddesses. We study Native American culture, different spiritualities from around the world. And we do retreats 3 times a year at various locations in the county. And we have a lot of fun. We all love each other. We have all been through lots of trials and tribulations together. They, in fact, when I turned 70, I was crowned by this sacred feminine circle.
Oh, what was that like?
It was just awesome. They blindfolded me and took me to an unknown location. And when I got there, the drums were beating boom, ba boom, ba boom, ba boom. And they took me in and set me down in a royal chair and crowned me. And each sister read to me what I had meant to them through the years.
Wow, that sounds so beautiful.
And we had sweet foods and drink and poetry and song.
Wow, everyone should be celebrated
like
that.
It was wonderful. I hope that every woman can do that.
Thank you for sharing that with us.
It was a wonderful experience. Goosebumps.
Well, I'm sure people listening can tell how much life and vibrancy and love and beauty these two women are full of, you know? And we do have a song. It's a Rumi poem that Chris Williamson is going to sing off her, I think it's her Raw CD, Real Deal CD. And the Rumi poem is this: let the beauty we love be what we do. There are hundreds of ways to kneel and kiss the ground.
Let the beauty we love be what we do. There are hundreds of ways to kneel and kiss the ground. Let the beauty we love be what we do. There are kneel and kiss the ground. Keep walking, though there's no place to get to. Don't try to see through the distances. That's not you move today.
today like
any other day.
We wake up empty and frightened. Don't open the door to the sky and begin to read today.
Any other day.
We wake up empty and frightened. Take down an instrument of music. Let the beauty we love be what we do. There are hundreds of ways to kneel and kiss. Let the beauty we love be what we do. There are hundreds of ways to kneel
and kiss the ground.
Welcome back to Living Proof. If you just joined us, that was Chris Williamson off her Real Deal CD singing a beautiful Rumi poem. And this is Diane and Sheridan co-hosting Living Proof. We are in studio with our beautiful, wonderful elder guests, Sharon Macer and Cha-Cha Tracy.
Yes, yes, yes. Listen, I want to get into something really juicy.
Ooh.
Because you vibrant women, I know you're eager to talk about just about anything. So, I know in the lesbian community, matter of fact, I wrote a play about a couple, and the issue was around not being able to, you know, be intimate with one another, be sexual with one another. You know, we have this thing about lesbian bed death. And not that you have to get so deep into your relationship or anything. I'm just curious, at your age, how does that work?
How do you keep the sparks? Yeah.
Yeah.
How do you keep them? The sparks alive.
Oh, with feathers and sexy lingerie.
Perfume, essential oils,
or you,
massages.
Yeah, yeah. Or you, you know, to take it any direction, you know, from what you've learned from past relationships to now and just mix it up, you know. What?
Well, for me, I've been in five relationships, long-term relationships, and four of those relationships ended with lesbian bed death. And I made a vow to myself that I would never have that happen again, should I ever be fortunate enough to be in a partnership again. That was one of the things that was a priority for me, was to express my love to my partner all the time, not just in the very beginning, in the first few months or the first year or 2 years, but ongoing, and to how important it was to me to make love, to have that an expression, one more expression of how I love my partner, and to make time for it, and to, for me, the sacredness, the specialness, the fun of it, and that's what I wanted, and that's pretty much what I have, and I'm really thrilled with that. And when problems do come up, we have a nice arrangement that we tell the truth to each other. And we make time to tell the truth. And if things aren't working well, we ask each other why, and we work it through.
Where do you get this strength from? I mean, to
be 73 and five relationships.
Yeah, because I mean, you're speaking with a sense of strength and power, yeah. And like no more of this baloney.
It's
you
by
know?
Taking the time to go inside and knowing who I am and what I want. What I will have in my life, what I won't, to be honest with myself that way. Mm. And also I'm always open to change. Mm. If there's a way that's that works that's more fun, or I can learn something, I'm more than happy to accept that rep.
Mm. Wow, beautiful. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
For people that don't know what lesbian bed death is, could you give a definition of it and how that was in your life?
It was starting out with a partner, with wooing, kissing, and then, you know, this is a progression, wooing, kissing, turn on, what we might call a turn on, like maybe fine lingerie or music or candlelight and roses and just different things that would lead you to the bedroom, and the making love would be hot and heavy, and maybe it was real, maybe it wasn't. I don't know, but I do know that it would reach the point in all four relationships where there wasn't even kissing anymore. Maybe a peck on the cheek. There wasn't a desire there. There was never any special time made to make love. Didn't mean we didn't care about each other. Mm-hmm. Because I believe that in the four people that I was with, that we did. They were fine women. And but the lovemaking just went by the way. We didn't take the time to keep it alive.
So both of you didn't take, not one,
right,
or the other. Okay, both
of us, mm-hmm, didn't. And for myself, I settled, mm-hmm, for just being with the person and being loved by the person. I settled for not having that sexual need fulfilled. Mm-hmm. And that's why I said I decided I would never do that again.
Thank mm-hmm. you for explaining that, Cha-Cha.
Mm-hmm. Sharon, what do you want to share around this topic with your experience from your 11 or 12 relationships?
I think I relate to this topic from a really different perspective, which is more the perspective of relationship rather than... I'm trying to put this together here. We started out, before we became sexually involved with each other, we read the Conscious Loving Commitments of Gay and Catherine Hendricks. So they have six commitments, and they're basically, you commit to each other's well-being, you commit to your own well-being, you commit to telling the truth, you commit to... there's six of them. Those are the three that stand out. And you also commit to having fun in your relationship.
And to gathering weekly to talk about what's going on in your life.
Speaking to the mic. So we had we created a framework of orientation that we could come back to. And for me, being authentic in relationship is extraordinarily important. It's like, I don't want to be in a relationship if I can't be authentic. So the only thing that holds me back from being authentic right now is my own authenticity or lack of it. You know, knowing what I want, knowing what I feel, knowing what I need. So to me, sexuality is just one of the many issues. We have issues around space, the use of space. We have issues. That's our biggest issue, actually, to me. But we've had to learn how to, like spending time apart and time together, that kind of thing. How to talk to each other, when to talk to each other, what to talk to each other about. I mean, there are lots of issues in relationship. And we have this framework that lets us talk about all of them, or any of them. Mm-hmm. And that's very important to me. That's extremely important to me. Otherwise, I can't. I'm not in the relationship.
I hate to interrupt you, Sharon, but I need to interject this little thing. After we read those commitments, uh-huh, conscious loving and stuff, we closed the book and we went to bed. After we agreed to it. And it was fabulous.
You're too fun. And that was good.
I'm done.
That's good to know.
Hey, it worked. Okay, people out there, the book, it worked.
Right. Well, I needed that because I needed to be kind. That's one of the things about being older and having had a lot of experience and learning what didn't work is finding out what will work or what, trying what I think will work. So being conscious, being aware of what we're doing, being aware of our agreements, that's the other, one of the other things I think was making and sticking to agreements. Mm-hmm. You know, having the things that make relationship work. Before I had the romance, I had the sex, I didn't have anything, any structure mm-hmm. for what makes a relationship work and no good experience about how to do that. No illustrations from my family on how to do that. Mm-hmm. So I didn't feel safe without having something in place that would allow me to say, well, this is working or it's not working. Otherwise, it was just like jelly. It would have been all over the place, you know, mm-hmm. maple syrup, sticky and messy.
Mm-hmm. So you both had experiences before meeting one another mm-hmm. that brought you to this place of what you will and will not accept mm-hmm. in your life and in your partner and in your relationship, which is, I think that's what life experience is all about. Mm-hmm. We learn those lessons and then we apply them to the present time so that we can be happy mm-hmm. and fulfilled.
Yes, be happy. We like that.
Yeah.
Happy.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
Well, I'm curious about your coming out stories because you both are in your 70s. Cha-Cha, you talked about Utah and coming out mm-hmm. as a lesbian in Utah. And Sharon, you talked about coming out at age 36, I believe. So I'm very curious about your coming out stories. So, Cha-Cha, could you start?
Yes, I'll give you a quickie. I lived in Utah for 20 years, and mm-hmm. I had never heard the word lesbian until I came to San Francisco. I left... I was 19 when I left Utah, and the only thing that I'd ever known was that I liked my gym teachers, and but I dated guys, and but not a whole lot. I was more kind of a loner and stuff, and I left Utah because I hit what I called the glass ceiling. I was worked for the telephone company there, and I could just go no further with the company that. It was Women's Lib wasn't happening right then. So I bought a plane ticket and came to California. And I came, so that was 19. I came out when I was 20. And I came out by meeting up with someone in a gay bar. Mm. And that's how, that was the social life at that time, was meeting women in gay bars. That's all there was, you know.
What was the name of the bar?
It was called the Hula Shack.
The Hula Shack.
That was the first gay bar I was ever in. It was called the Hula Shack. And I lived on Geary Street, and I got in a taxi, and I said, I want you to take me to a place where women are with women. And the guy looked at me, and I said, yes. You heard it right. Mm. He said, okay, I know where to take you. And I said, and let me off a block away because I don't want anybody to see me coming in a taxi. So he did that. And I ended up in this place called the Hula Shack. And the bartender that was there, her name was Ronnie. And she turned out to be my lover years later. We were partners for about 4 years. Mm. Yeah. Also, and we were owners of bars by then. So
how was it when you were growing up in Utah, you'd never heard the word lesbian until you moved to San Francisco when you were 19. Well, how was that with your family?
My family, I made a decision at that time, knowing that the Mormon take on being gay was not good.
So you knew that already, right?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Well, I didn't know it when I was 19.
Oh, okay.
I didn't know that. I didn't know it until I'd come out. Oh. And I knew not to say anything to my family mm-hmm. that there would be mass hysteria. And what finally happened was I didn't come out until about 6 years ago. And everything that I'd ever thought of did come true. My mother disowned me. She ended up having a stroke. It was like when I came out, she said,
This is kind of hard for me to talk about.
Well, you just take a breath. I mean, you don't even have to go there if you don't want to. I just want to say, so you came out to your mom when you were 65?
Well, here's what happened. In my family, I had a cousin that had an argument with my mother and took issue and chose to write up my mother a venomous letter. And in that letter, she talked about my father being an alcoholic and about her butch lesbian dyke daughter. And my mother called me up and read me the letter, and she said, "Aren't you upset about the letter?" And I said, "No." She said, "Well, it isn't true, is it?" And I said, "Would it make any difference if it was?" And she said, "Well, it isn't true, is it?" And I said, "Yes, it is." And with that, she went, "Oh, no!" Well, that's, I mean, she really did that. That's not an exaggeration. Oh. And I could hear it, you know, fall to the floor
Sorry.
Yeah, and I said, "Mom, you know, I'm the same person that I was yesterday that you loved and everything." Mm. And I said, "I can give you literature from PFLAG, and you can learn about other families that have gone through this. I wouldn't have that filth in my house." Mm. It was really, really hard, and I went into retreat for about a little over a week into seclusion and worked through the forgiveness and all the things around it. It was really, really challenging. So anyway, I know that my mother did love me, and that's the bottom line there. There was forgiveness. Mm. So...
Thank you so much, Chacha.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Maybe this would be a good spot to do the chant right now. Would you be open to chanting for us?
Mm-hmm. Yes, I can do that.
Mm-hmm.
I wrote a chant that came to me while I was walking out in the woods one day, and I was just humming, and just these words came to me. So... I'll share them with you.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Ancestor spirit guides, walk with me. Let my eyes be open, heart beating free. I am healed. I am whole. I am healed. I am whole. Trials and tribulations now I see are gifts from spirit for this earthly journey. I am healed. I am whole. I am healed. I am whole. Truth and joy are now with me. I walk my talk. And I am free. I am healed. I am whole.
I am whole.
I am healed.
I am healed.
I am whole.
I am whole.
I am free.
Yeah. Beautiful.
Blessed be.
Thank you.
So it is.
Sharon.
Mm. No, that was
wasn't that beautiful?
Yeah.
I know.
Yeah,
we can just go way down. Beautiful. Thank you.
Beautiful soul, Chacha has.
Yeah. Oh, so we're going to talk to you now. You got a chant? No, I'm just teasing. No, so tell us about your coming out and go right into the women's school.
Okay. Well, the coming out was very different. My mother was very open-minded, surprisingly so. Really, there was never a wave or a ripple. And my father, who was my stepfather, accepted it also. He's a very kind man. And I met someone when I was 36. I had a 18-month-old daughter at that time, and I just fell in love. It was my first experience of falling in love. I'd been married, but my marriage to my husband was based on kind of a spiritual resonance. But it didn't have the physical component to it that bonded us. And so we went in the Peace Corps and did all kinds of good stuff, but it didn't really hold. So actually, I came back from a trip, and we sat down and had coffee, and I just knew something was wrong. I said, "Are you having an affair?" I don't even know where that came from. And he said, "Yes." And then, you know, it just didn't work out. You know, I was however open-minded I was. So I ended up putting everything in my Volkswagen and driving back to California, my little red bug. And eventually where I landed was in Marin County on Mount Tam at a cabin that an aunt of mine owned. And I had a child. I was not married. I have a wonderful daughter. And at that time, I was not married to her father. And my friend was visiting. My lesbian friend was visiting me from Canada. And I said, "Oh, I'm thinking about starting a group, a group that talks about sex." And she said, "Oh, I'll help you. And so we put an ad in the Pacific Sun. And lo and behold, six people showed up. And one of these women was somebody that I really fell deeply in love with and, you know, had a strong attraction to. And that lasted about 6 months before that fell apart, because that was in 79. There were a lot of bars were the scene. Cocaine was very predominant. She was an alcoholic. And and I knew nothing about how to have a relationship or how to be strong in relationship, because I come from a very dysfunctional family, mother, suicidal, that kind of thing. So, but anyway, it was a completely changed. I could literally feel my head spinning in my brain spinning in my head. I actually felt like my head was turning around, and I knew that I would be always much happier in that kind of a situation, even if it was not with her. I just knew, like, oh, this feels like home. So, and I don't know. I mean, I wasn't a lesbian from childhood. I was attracted to women and women's statues and stuff, but I never had any sexual feelings towards women, but not much towards men either. So anyway, I'm a happy lesbian. I like women. I like being around women. I love women. I really resonate, and I think I have a calling to support women, to help, to advocate for women. So that's partly how I got to the women's school, and that work is very important to me, and through that I hope to empower women to empower other women. And I think there's a pathway of that begins with awareness and leads to empowerment, and then hopefully leads to leadership.
Beautiful.
Yeah. And I think the way women lead is actually through their relationships. It's not about being angry. It's not about politics so much, although there's nothing separate. So one spirituality shows up in all aspects of life. But women are everywhere, and they go everywhere. They love relationships. They love connecting to people. And I'm encourage them to learn the skills that make for good relationships, because through that, through the power of love, through the power of harmony, through the power of peace, we can teach everybody how to bring that about.
Do you have a website?
We have a website, and we have a new website being built. But if you go to www. Women's School, Women's School, so there's two S's in the middle, womensschool.org, you will see our present Women's School website, which has not been updated for a long time because it's difficult to do. But you can email us and get on our mailing list at info@womensschool.org with two S's. And on the website, you can see our mission statement, and which is to empower women through education, networking, and support. And we're basically a spiritual education center is what we are. And we're growing rapidly. We have upcoming, we have Tuesday night circles in Sebastopol, 7 o'clock at Radiant Beauty. One's an elder circle. One's a young woman's conference, confidence circle. One's Vicki leads a coaching circle, and I lead Spiritual Salon. The first Tuesday of every month, Spiritual Salon, come and talk about spiritual issues, share what you learn, practice the skills of relationship in community. Circle guidelines teach us how to relate.
So if people want more information on this, they can write you at info@womensschool2s.org.
Yes.
We have to think about closing our show now. We have 2 minutes. So that is about 1 minute per each of you. And we always like to ask our guests for advice to our listeners in whatever format you would like. So Sharon, since we're speaking with you, not to cut you off, I feel like we could do another show just on the women's school, you know? Mm-hmm. Want to thank you and for being here. And do you have any advice for somebody out there?
Yes, I do. I think you have to go and learn about how to have relationships, and you have to learn about what it is that you need to be in yourself. For instance, you need to have a sense of boundaries. You need to know what boundaries are all about. You need to know how to ask for things. You need to know what questions to ask. You need to be able to ask a question. You need to be able to ask questions like, how do I feel about this, and how will it affect me? And so I'm going to do a relationship series class.
Excellent.
And you can email me and I'll tell you about that.
Oh, sounds like really good advice. Thank you. Spoken from somebody who knows what she's talking about.
That's right.
Cha-cha. Advice to someone out there.
Well, what I'd like to say that there's nothing that that I need, that you need from anyone except respect and love. And if you can't get that, then you don't need them in your life. Respect and love are the big ones.
Love it.
Truth.
Love it. Love it.
Truth.
Thank you. Thank you both
so much.
We can keep going, right?
We weren't going to say anything.
I know.
Now it's over.
Thank you, everybody, for listening to us tonight. And for Sharon, thank you so much for being here. Cha-Cha, thank you so much. Remember, everybody, like Sharon and Cha-Cha, you too can be living proof that through sharing your story, you can help our community be visible and be seen and embraced as vibrant, proud, and courageous. We'll be back next month. Mm. Until then,
good night.
I step out of the ordinary. I can feel my soul ascending.